Hey guys, Al Sterling with For Geek's Sake here. Listen, the episode you're about to listen to is going to sound a little discombobulated. I want to apologize for that in advance. We had an amazing opportunity to interview an amazing game designer, and we just kind of jumped on it. And so the result is that our segments are going to be a little bit of out of order. So just please bear with us. I promise you this episode is worth it. I'm very, very proud of it. Very, very excited. So enjoy.
I need help reacting to something.
Valar Morghulis.
Yes. All men must die. But we are not men.
This is my boomstick!
But anger makes you stupid. Stupid gets you killed.
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster, she said, kid.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to For Geek's Sake. Once again here in the hotel room with Nick. Say hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, and we're going to pronounce this correctly, darn it. I'm so excited to have her here. Game designer Sydney Engelstein.
Hi.
Is that right? Did I do it?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Well
good, good.
Well done.
We won't talk about the how many times it took me to do that correctly. So Sydney is here because she is a game designer, and we are here at Dice Tower Con, and we are so excited to be here. And there's so many great things going on, but I wanted to talk about her game. So I want, you know what? I'm just going to shut up. Tell us about your game. Tell us about you.
Well, I'm the designer, or co-designer with my dad of Space Cadets Dice Duel, which is a real-time dice rolling game where you have two teams that both command a spaceship and try to blow the other one up.
So I have not gotten to play this yet. I have to be very honest with you, and I'm very upset about it because I've looked at the game, I've held the game in my hands, I've watched the videos on it, I've listened to Tom over at Dice Tower, his video review of it. He absolutely loved it. It is an award winning game, and it looks just like insane fun.
I'm a bit biased, but I think it's incredibly fun.
I've seen this game played several times in the game groups that I have in several states where I've lived, and it's still being brought to the table on a constant basis with new players and old players, and everybody just you haven't played Space Cadets yet? No.
And it's
coming out.
And the thing about this game that looks like so much fun to me is that you're sitting there, you've got people just frantically rolling dice and trying to put stuff, and there's one person is using dice to fly the ship, and one person's using dice to get the missiles where they're supposed to be, and they're trying to get this other ship, and you've got at times eight people all screaming at each other at the same time as dice. It looks like such intense chaos, which is of course all of my favorite things.
This is a game you cannot have open containers of anything on the table with, because it just, people are moving everywhere, people are just constantly rolling dice and moving around the table and yelling and screaming. It is a great game.
Well, one of the things that's one of my favorite things in games too, and when we were designing it, one of the first things we said was like, well, how can we make people scream more? Like, we want more screaming at each other.
So now what did you, now you, so you were one of the designers for the game?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how old were you when you were working on the game?
Dice Duel came out 2 years ago, so 17.
That's
impressive.
I just want to be clear here. At 17, I was accomplishing absolutely nothing.
I was trying to figure out how not to accomplish many things.
That's true. I think that's probably also accurate. I just said that is such an amazing accomplishment to accomplish at 17 years old. That is, there are game designers currently toiling away who have not had nearly the success that you guys have had, and that's just congratulations. So I'm curious, how have you found the geek culture in general? Because I mean, you're both young and you're a girl, and both of those things can occasionally work against you. I mean, have you found this to be welcoming? Have you got any flack for it? Do you find anybody giving you a hard time?
I have often said to my friends who aren't board gamers that board game culture is the nicest group of people you will ever meet.
I would agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just go up to them. Like, that's how I met you two. I just walked up. I said, hey, are you playing this game? Can I watch? And now we're, like, all best friends.
We were actually playing Spyfall, which we'll talk about in a little bit, because holy smokes, what an awesome game. But we're sitting there playing Silent Hill, and she comes over, and she did. There was, we were sitting with a bunch of strangers playing this game. And she just wanted to sit and watch, and no, you have to play. So we just kind of.
There's no watching. You have to play Spyro.
And I have to tell you, she was the best player at the table.
Yeah, I think you won your first round, didn't you?
No, I lost my first round as a spy, but I won my second.
That's
round.
Right.
She was the
that's
only right. spy to win,
yeah,
as a matter
that's
of fact.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah,
so sure, she, and her questions were just, her answers were awesome. Everything, like she. That was my second time playing the game, and I fancied myself pretty decent at it. And then she sat down, and I'm like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I'm going to,
I've been doing this wrong.
Exactly. That's just, so you're here. How many, so have you been to Dice Tower before?
I've not been to Dice Tower Con before, but I've been to a lot of cons, because I kind of grew up in board game culture. My dad, my basement is full of board games, and it has been since before I can remember. So when I was little, I was playing, you know, Evo and nice. Ghost Chase.
Ghost
and
Chase, yes.
I've been going to board game conventions also since I was really little.
Nice.
So my dad, I thankfully just let me wander around by myself from an age that he probably shouldn't have been letting me wander around by myself. But it's just great. You know, you meet so many interesting people. I live in New Jersey, and my local convention is DexCon, and I've been going there since I was like 10. So people there are my family, kind of. And so my mom, who's less into board games than the rest of us, was a bit disturbed when I came home and said, I made a friend named Weasel who dresses up as like a general from war. She's like, this is a bad thing. But everyone's just such nice people.
And, you know, I've said it before on the show here. I've done a little bit of the competition stuff. And I got back into Magic the Gathering for a little while.
I'm sorry.
And went to those. I enjoyed the game, but the
how's recovery?
It's going actually really well. I think I'm 6 months without having bought a booster pack. So I'm on the backside. But the thing that drove me nuts about it is I would go to these tournaments and, you know, even casual, like, you know, just local game store tournaments, and these guys are so angry. They're so intense, and I'm like, I'm playing a game, guys. You realize we're still like, I understand this is a big deal. I understand these cards can be worth money. We're still playing a game, and no board game, and no one I've met, I've not met a single person. At Dice Tower Con, I've not met a single person in the board game groups that I've been around have been just anything but awesome. You know, like occasionally you get that one guy who's like, well, you get like little hipster gamers, you know what I mean? Like,
there's Dice, where are the workers?
Exactly, like the you know, extreme European gamers, you know, Ameritrash, you know, those, but like even they are like, oh, Ameritrash, but seriously, if you guys want to play Dead of Winter, let me know, you know, like. There's still, I mean, it's such a more open and welcoming group.
There seems to be, and I kind of hesitate to say this, but there seems to be a fellowship that goes with that, not to quote a friend of ours, right, that goes with that, and everybody's included. It's an inclusive hobby. It's not exclusive. It's very rarely you'll find somebody that will just kind of omit others from playing with them. And all ages are welcome. All genders are welcome. It doesn't matter who it is, but we're all here to play, and we all have an open chair that we can fill.
Exactly, exactly. So Dice Tower Con in particular, I think, differs from other conventions. And I say that as a guy who's literally, this is my first convention ever at all. And I know this is yours too as well, Nick.
It is.
Okay, so then maybe we should direct this back at Sydney, who's been to more than one convention. Sydney, what do you think? I know, because Dice Tower takes place in Orlando every year in June. Okay, that part I've got right, correct?
I think so.
More or less.
Okay, yeah. So, how does Dice Tower Con for you differ from a MegaCon or a Comic-Con or you know, something along those lines?
Well, conventions that aren't specifically for board games tend to have like a much broader series of events. Like, I've been to a PAX, which includes video games much more heavily, and they have a board game room, but it's kind of like where you go when you're bored of all the rest of that stuff, and, you know, no one really is in there, or a few people are. I just went to a local anime convention, and I dragged my friend to the board game room because I wanted to get off my feet for a bit, and I saw one person had Life Out, and then there were like three separate games of Apples to Apples, and I'm like, we're leaving. Going out that door. So while other conventions include many facets, I think the fact that board game conventions have stayed so true to the central tenet of what they're about, you know,
right.
There is just board games are the focus, and everyone is playing them together.
And that was, I think, what surprised me, because when Nick called me and he said, "Listen, I'm coming to Orlando. We're going to go to Dice Tower Con." I was very excited about that, and I immediately was like, "Okay, I'm cosplaying." And so I put together. Yep. I had a Lando Calrissian. I figured it out. I had a girl who's going to throw my hair out for me, and I mean the whole thing. And I was like, "I'll make Nick dress as Han Solo. It's going to be great." And I'm like, "Nick, let's do it." He's like, "They don't dress up for this one.
Not even a little bit.
No." And I was like,
I saw one guy, I think he had a combo Mickey Mouse Darth Vader helmet walking around the other day. That's about as far as it went, and that was completely open face. It was just a little hat.
Yeah.
That's about as far as they go.
Yeah. So, and I think that's an important thing to know. So if you're into board games, even if you've not gone any farther down the rabbit hole than Ticket to Ride or Settlers of Catan, I still feel like this is a really great accessible kind of thing for people to get involved and do, you know? There's these giant players, you know, players looking for players boards. You just sit down and be like, "I don't know what I'm doing." That's great, you know? And that has been really, really fantastic. So what has been your favorite con? I mean, of all the cons you've gone to, what's been the one that really you remember?
Probably the coolest con that I go to is Gen Con, which is the biggest game convention, definitely in America. I don't know if it's starting to get larger than Essen, which is in Germany and was previously the largest, if not still the largest. But Gen Con is one of the ones where tons of people dress up.
Okay, so that's the one. Okay.
And I'm going to cosplay there. It's later this summer.
So what are you cosplaying as? Do you know yet?
Yeah, I'm going to go as Shinon from Sword Art Online 2.
Oh, very nice. Going for the anime. All right.
That's one of the things. Like, I actually did see cosplayers who were dressed up as Dixit cards, which was really, really interesting.
Huh.
The girl with the fish swimming through her skirt.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the other one was. But they're from video games. They're from anime. They're Disney princesses. They're from movies. There was this really impressive cosplay of two of the sweet racers from Wreck-It Ralph with cars.
Full cars.
Yes. And
wow.
So there's just
that's got to be awkward when you go to the bathroom. That's one of the things
that's going to be hard to sit down for. That. I need to take a break and just sit down for somewhere. No. No, you're not. Nope.
There's a radius around the convention center where you can walk in full face paint, costume, anything, and people are just nodding and smiling. And then there's like a radius outside of that where they're not gamers.
Nope.
You know?
So I did at one point. Nice. I had gotten a Indiana Jones cosplay. It was for Halloween, but I was just looking for an excuse. So I went out and I got the whip, I had the jacket, I had the man satchel thing, and I took my phone and I had the Indiana Jones soundtrack. I was just playing as I walked around, and I was very excited. I had the whole thing together, and it's like this is probably late September, early October, and I'm looking around. I'm like, I'm not waiting a month to do this, so I just wore it for a day. And there's something about waiting in the checkout line at your grocery store. Dun, 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 dun. I'm like, milk and some corn, and I need to get this. People are just, I mean, they're staring at you, but I just didn't care. I was so excited. The whole thing. It was, oh, I love it. I'm so excited. When I was growing up, it wasn't called cosplay. It was just called that idiot's in a costume. What is he doing? Like, it's really exciting.
Halloween yet.
Exactly. So it's really exciting to be able to have that opportunity. Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to wrap up here in just a minute, but before we do, I wanted to ask you, Sydney, if there were other folks who were interested in game design, and perhaps didn't, you know, have you know, some of the opportunities you did, what would you tell them? Where should they start?
I think the most important place to start for a board game is to think about what you want to see in board game design, because a lot of times people get bogged down in needing to make new mechanics, and there are so many mechanics already made because there's millions of board games that a lot of times you actually make less good mechanics because you're trying so hard to differentiate it. The best board games take mechanics that they like from other games and rearrange them in new and interesting ways, and it doesn't mean you're plagiarizing or you're just doing their game with a twist. Their game with a twist is like half the games people love that are much more played than the original, because that's going to be fun and new and exciting.
I think we can see that even with just some of the most generic party games, because I think there is like if you take something like, you know, you mentioned Apples to Apples, and while I didn't see a whole lot of Apples to Apples being played at a board game convention, you see that I noticed that eventually same mechanic across like 15 different games that must have been, were all just minor variations on it, and some of them, for example, like Cards Against Humanities, suddenly went just through the roof by the same mechanic and just made it incredibly inappropriate. And that alone just made it 1,000 times more fun to play.
We talked about just kind of the community a few minutes ago, and that's kind of one of the interesting things I find about the board game community, whether it's designers, publishers, and even the players, is nobody terribly minds if the concept of a mechanic is translated to another game, right? I mean, we can talk about perhaps, you know, copyright litigation and everything else like that later on some of the time. But in essence, you're absolutely right. I mean, some mechanics are translating, and how you apply those mechanics and how you actually apply the theme behind it and get people involved in it, you know, whether it's Ameritrash or Amerithrash, or it's you know, a Euro style game, it's those mechanics that actually kind of make and build that game and how it's applied.
The example I always think of is, I'm sure there were deck building games before this, but the one that really came into the light was Dominion, right? Dominion took the gaming by storm, like deck building. And now there are a million deck builders. And I'm sure if you went and interviewed a dozen people, they'd all have a different favorite one. Just because Dominion came out before another deck building game doesn't mean that Nightfall isn't also an amazing game, or all kinds of other deck builders that exist.
You know, and that's actually, it's really interesting you mentioned deck building too, because I got to play Star Realms. Actually, was the first deck builder I ever played, which I'm sure is true for a lot of people at this point. And I didn't get to play Dominion until, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago. I finally played Dominion.
Yeah, I dragged you to it 2 days ago.
And now that I play Dominion, I can suddenly see it, because I played several of the deck builders since then, and I now see how everybody started. You can see Dominion was, you can obviously see everybody borrowed from this one. Like, okay, this is where this started, and you can see and appreciate that, but that doesn't take away from any other ones that I was playing. I agree 100%. That's a really, really interesting point. Okay, so we're going to go take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Dice Tower Con, the games that are going on here, the games we want to recommend, the things that maybe we want to avoid, all that and a little bit more. So hang out. We'll be right back. And ladies and gentlemen, we are back here on For Geek's Sake. I am recording today, coming to you live. Well, not live, because you don't get it live. We're going to take a look. I have her name in front of me, so I do not mess this thing up. We are coming to you from the Doubletree Hotel at Dice Tower Con, brought to you by Dice Tower, Dice Tower Podcast, and all those wonderful guys over there. I am here today with one of our editors, Nick, who has one who has finally introduced me to the world of conventions. And we are so very, very fortunate to be in the – I keep wanting to say studio. I guess it's kind of a studio. We brought our stuff. We set it up. Does that – the studio,
it counts.
It counts in our heart.
We're recording. It counts.
And there you go. There's microphones. There's a soundboard. You know, we're good. We are here with Sydney Engelstein. Did I do it right again?
Yep.
I'm 2 for 2. I'm not even going to try to say her name again until the very end of the show. We are here, a game designer, and she has agreed to come on and hang out with us and talk with us a little bit about it. And we're so, so very excited to have her here. So let's talk games. Last night was Dice Towers Award, the Dice Tower Awards. I got to go see it live. It was actually really, really interesting. I got to tell you, Nick, this was the one thing that was not negotiable. Like, this was happening.
That was happening.
And I was like, meh, I guess we'll see. I got so into it.
Yeah,
and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God. And you know what got me more? I was more concerned with whether or not the predictions were correct, because they had,
Eric Summer was taking guesses as to each category, and then plugging his guess, and he had a good streak going about 4 games in a row.
It was six games in a row before he got one wrong.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Listen, I was tracking, because I was like, tracking. I was more concerned about whether Eric was right than I was who actually won the game.
Well, he does get to vote for who wins, so he's a little bit on the inside track.
This is true.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not taking the away from him, but you could tell he was agonizing. He was legitimately like, oh God, I really hope I get this one right. And that was really, really, really cool. So there's a bunch of amazing games going on around here. And again, guys, if you get a chance, when Dice Tower Con comes through next year, you guys have got to come out. If you're in the Orlando area, check this thing out. It is worth your time. It is absolutely amazing. But what games are you loving, Sydney? What games did you see that you've just been really, really enjoying?
I haven't actually gotten to play as much as I'd wanted to, but probably my favorite new thing that I tried was Spyfall, for sure.
I heard it was because you were playing with, like, amazing people. That's what
that's what I've been telling everyone, so.
No, we were just talking about that about an hour ago. Spyfall is so simplistic in its application, and it's almost staring you in the face as soon as you understand the rules. Like, why didn't we think of this before?
Absolutely.
Or perhaps we did, and I'm just not aware of it. But in recent memory, this is something that we should have seen come down here.
Okay.
And we just didn't see it.
Now, if you're interested in the games, I want to encourage you to go check them out. Nick actually is the one who does all of our board game reviews, so we're gonna make sure that you can find a lot of reviews there. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but the very, very, very core idea here is that everybody gets a card. One person gets a card that they're the spy. Everybody else gets a location, and they all get the same location, like a zoo. And then on their card is also what role they play in the zoo, whether they're a tourist or the manager or an animal handler. And then you ask each other questions, one question at a time, and you try to figure out who the spy is. So the spy is trying to not reveal that they're the spy while figuring out the location. So I know that's the quick and dirty, but that's the idea.
That's about the rule book.
Yeah. And it is incredibly simple to play. You literally, I walked in, sat down, had no idea what I was doing. Within about a minute, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good.
It plays, I think, 4 to 8 players, I believe it is.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
up to 8. So
yeah,
it's a great party game. It's very simple. It's compact. It's portable. You can take it wherever you go.
It's also hard to get your hands on because this thing has been flying off the shelves faster than they can print it.
It was originally published in Europe. Didn't had an English rule book associated with it. Didn't really make it over here until about, 3 or 4 months ago and kind of a production. Cryptozoic picked it up, actually. And so now it's actually available-ish if you can find it. If you can see it, grab it, pay for it, run away.
And it's actually not bad, $17, which for board games and the world of board games, like there was one I played. What was it? Oh, what was the one that we played back at the very expensive game from Griffin Games?
Clockwork Wars.
Have you seen Clockwork Wars at all?
No, but my dad played it, and he was just telling me about it.
A gorgeous game.
That's wonderful. The sculpts are amazing.
I don't know if it reaches the $100 price point. But that was which is the thing, too. $100 for a game, I'm like, that's actually not that expensive for a board. I mean, it's on definitely on the higher end, but I've seen more expensive than that, you know? So
I think the price point is reflective of the quality of the actual tiles
and
everything else that goes with it.
Absolutely.
I'm glad I played it. It's a great game.
I can't. So have you gotten to play Dead of Winter at all?
No, but I have watched people play.
So Dead of Winter looks like, okay, if they tried to tell me that they had not watched, if they have not watched Walking Dead, I'm going to call them a liar. It definitely looks like a lot of the stuff looks and feels very, very, Walking Dead. But it's not Walking Dead. It's not associated with Walking Dead or anything like that. So the idea behind this one is, you're all survivors of a zombie apocalypse and you've got to work together. And you end up, the thing that threw me off with this one is that you end up with multiple players, multiple followers. So each player, like I had 3 or 4 people in my little party and the other people had 3 or 4 people in their party. And you're working together to try to avoid being eaten by zombies while also having enough supplies. You're dealing with crises along the way. What was the name of the mechanic it introduced?
It's essentially a cooperative, but technically a semi-cooperative, because there is a small percentage of chance that one of the secret objectives a player may get is a traitor card, which still has an objective on it, but they have the ability to actually tank the game. Or at least meet their objective that is counter to what the other players are trying to do. So it's every card is a secret objective is actually meant to kind of induce suspicion amongst all the players and survivors. So it really, there's some tension there.
Yeah, it was. Well, we were playing though. Everybody worked together, but I feel like we kind of lost out because everybody was working together. You know, have you gotten to play anything else while you've been around here? I know that you've been running around very busy.
I'm looking at your sheet, and I played 2 rounds of Tragedy Looper. Actually,
how was that?
I personally think the game is super cool.
Yeah.
I worry a little bit that experienced players might break it because they will know what's going on because it involves a lot of hidden information. It's one mastermind against the 3 other players who are trying to stop them from accomplishing some hidden goal. And they have like a sheet that lists all the goals it could possibly be. And they have a certain number of loops back in time in order to figure out what the goal is. And so if you get really experienced, there are really complicated missions, but I worry that they'll be able to see the signs immediately and start throwing things around.
So you're concerned that the long-term replay isn't quite as high.
But I have never gotten to that point.
Right. Tragedy
Looper.
Tragedy Looper. Now, because if you've seen I'm told that if you've seen the movie Looper,
basically kind of reset throughout the game, correct?
Yeah, you don't know what's resetting it, but every time the mastermind accomplishes their goal, everything resets back to the beginning, and you try to keep them from winning it that way again until hopefully you have a certain number of loops to keep them from winning it at all.
Now, this actually won one of the Dice Tower Awards. Which one did it win?
Absolutely.
It
won the most innovative.
Most innovative.
Most
that
innovative
was,
game.
And as they were describing the game, I was like, that sounds just phenomenal.
It's a great concept.
That is absolutely amazing. I'm really, really interested in picking that one and trying to get to play that one before we wrap up here. What else, Nick? Did you have anything else that you were really, really excited about?
I was actually just more excited about experiencing the con in general. But in terms of games, I was thrilled to actually get the chance to play Eagle Griffin's Clockwork Wars, like we just talked about. So it was like a big highlight for me. I was looking forward to that. I sought that out specifically, but also Dead of Winter as well. I know we talked about that. Splendor also got that to the table.
Now
really
Splendor, we got to pause for a minute. Splendor is fun. Have you gotten to play Splendor yet?
I did not play Splendor here, but I've played it several times at home.
Okay, so you're familiar with this one. There's another one that was great that I got introduced to. You know, Nick actually brought it with me the first night we were sitting down. He sets it down, he pulls it out, and within 30 seconds, I was understanding what was going on, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's such a great game. It actually won Family Game. One family game from Dice Tower, Space Cowboys is the publisher of it. And the great thing about Splendor is that it's one of those games that you can play you can play with all ages. The mechanics are so accessible.
I really think that Splendor is probably one of the first new gateway games we've had in quite some time. I mean, you could probably make a second level gateway, but I think first level introductory game is great. I taught my family how to play it. They picked it up. They love it.
I had my friends over who don't play board games, and they were like, oh, let's come over for a board game party. So I was running around like, gotta find board games that don't look like I'm patronizing them, but also they can pick up really fast. And I brought out Splendor, and it was great. And my friend, who's not a board gamer, was just one point on my heels, you know? So he really got it, and it was really fun.
That's exactly.
So essentially, if you're not familiar with Splendor is a card game essentially with a set collection. So essentially you're going to have several tokens or poker sized chips with different colored gems on them, and you're going to have a tableau of cards laid in front of you, different tiers of actual point value. And the goal is to get to 15 points. And so essentially you can draw, do one of several things during your turn. You can draw one of three different types of colors. You can draw two of one color if there's enough tokens available, or you can pick up a wild and then actually claim a card for later play off the tableau. And it's an engine building game. It's got a small economy towards it. People can understand it. It's a small point system, 15 points to win. So it's very accessible, and the artwork's very good. The quality and the components of the chips are excellent. And it's very small and portable. I mean, the box itself is a little larger than maybe it should be. But the components you can fit into a small bag, or like I do, a Crown Royal bag.
I was
going to
say
work, which gets me looks, but that's fine.
Well, and I think that's great too. The other big thing about this, of making it a great gateway game, is the game itself can. I mean, we played in like 15, 20 minutes, and we were done.
Yeah, we had a timer going.
Yeah, so we were. I mean, that I think is great for folks that are interested in starting to learn a game. When like, hey, complete this game with me, it'll only cost you 4 hours of your time, and they're like, oh my, you know. And I say 4 hours, so I'm like, oh, that sounds good. Like I play Twilight Imperium. Okay,
please,
that's a 14.
Watch the YouTube video before you sit down.
Exactly. Like after Twilight Imperium, everything seems like a short game. So I have to remember that not everybody is quite there. Now, what about Viticulture? Have you gotten to play this one at all, Sydney?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Okay, now Viticulture is actually one that was another one that Nick had turned me on to. Didn't it win something? I feel like Viticulture won something.
Yes, its expansion Tuscany, expanding the world of Viticulture, actually took the best expansion for this year, and well deserved.
So Viticulture is what we call a worker placement game. And by the way, if a lot of these terms are throwing any of you guys off, we're actually going to have one of our 101s. It's going to be called Board Game 101s. And actually, Nick's going to sit down and going to give you kind of a crash course in board games and get you caught up on all the basic terms. So if you've never played a game heavier than Monopoly, don't worry. We're going to get you the tools you need to get into games that I promise you will enjoy a lot more. Just so much more. I think the biggest problem with me getting involved in board games is I now look at like Trouble and Sorry and I'm like, no, I'm just not doing it.
No, they're exactly their title now.
Exactly. So Viticulture though is is basically the whole concept of the game is that you grow grapes, you make wine, you sell wine. And that's the entire idea behind the game. It's, you know, there's a process that goes along with it, but it all looks and feels. I mean, the game board is gorgeous. The artwork is amazing.
The theme really stands out because they've really taken the attempt to match the mechanics to the theme, and it really comes. It really stands out. The artwork is fantastic. We actually decorated our dining room after Viticulture. Worked with Jamie, from Stonemaier Games with that. Sydney, what would you say is your favorite thing that has happened here at the con? What do you think is your favorite memory from right now?
That's a big question.
Well, and we should know the con's not over, so we're
it's true, and we will exclude ourselves from that category.
I had a really funny moment where I walked into the main gaming room and I saw someone sitting with the rules of Dice Duel open. So I figure I'll be a good Samaritan, go over, ask them if they needed a teacher. And they said, actually, we need one more player, but if you could also teach, that would help. So never one to turn down a game of Dice Duel because I love the game. I said, sure. And then they were like, you want to be a captain? And I'm like, that'd be unfair. I'm too good. So I played the role that is the least impactful towards whether you win or lose. And so I taught the game. Like, I've taught it so many millions of times that I have it down to a science. And the guy makes a joke like, ha, you were so good at explaining that. What are you, the designer? And I said, yes. And everyone laughed. I thought I was making a joke. But I didn't realize they didn't take me seriously. And we went through the whole game. And then they asked me what I had designed because my badge says game designer. And I said, no, seriously, this game, I designed this.
Look at the lid.
And I had to go get the game box and show it to them.
Wow, really?
And then they took pictures and thought it was the funniest thing ever.
Okay, yeah, no, that's.
You have new fans now.
That's absolutely. Well, she was a minor celebrity sitting there playing Spyfall with us, too. I was like, oh, is she autographing stuff and whatever
game
else?
Game stopped for a minute.
Everything came to a screen. That was, yeah. What about you, Nick? What's been your favorite moment of the con so far?
I think my favorite moment of the con was actually getting to meet and shake hands and speak a little bit with some of the Dice Tower Network podcasters, fellow podcasters, and it was very nice. Everybody's accessible. Tom Vassell, Eric Sommer, and some of the other minor celebrities we have in our game world. but no, it was very nice. I was very surprised because I thought they'd be either A, too busy, or just B, kind of a little bit lofty in the ivory dice tower. But it was great. In the
ivory dice tower.
And they're very nice people, and I got to meet a lot of them. It was great. That was one of my favorite experiences right now.
I actually now really want an ivory dice tower. I feel like that would be the most expensive dice tower ever made, but just pure ivory. No, fake ivory. Fake ivory, not actual ivory.
It has
ivory.
To be more garish than the Feldfest salad bowl trophy.
That's true. Can I get the gold inlay dice together? I think for me, it is just, I've just loved the people, man. I mean, I've played so many amazing games. It has been so much fun, and I'm so glad that it's not over yet. I was pointing foam guns at people. I was lying on board games. We played a game called Sheriff of Nottingham that was insane. There's so many exciting games that I'm, the problem here is that I don't have the hundreds and hundreds of dollars I need to take all of this back and then teach this to everybody else I know.
And that's why I think a great shout out and plug is for the absolute great volunteers and setup we had at the library. This is a great library. I've always heard of the game libraries that some of these conventions have. This was amazing. There's got to be 800 games, 700 games available free of charge because your ticket got you here, and you just walk up, scan your badge, they will go grab whatever you need. There's a catalog, and the components are great. It's all catalog. And
absolutely.
You play, you put it back. If you want a teacher, they will do a teach for you.
They do. And it's great. Several times they've come out and showed us how to play the game. So yeah, I think more than anything, before we wrap this one up, I want to make sure we absolutely say a humongous thank you and a congratulations to Dice Tower for doing such a phenomenal job. Every single part of this thing has just been perfect. So I think though. Okay, so we're gonna take another break. When we come back, we're actually let Sydney escape because she's probably got better things to do. But before we go, Sydney, is there anything else you want to share? Any games that you want to mention? Any shout? You're gonna miss our shameless plug section, but this is your chance. Anything you'd like to share, say, with the world at large?
Well, I was just passed a note from Austin. But I should mention that at Gen Con, if any of your listeners are going to be there, my and my dad and my brother's new game is going to be coming out and available for sale from Stronghold Games. It's a Survive Space Attack.
Nice.
And
Survive Space Attack from Stronghold Games. You guys hear that? Write that down right now.
it's a update of Survive Escape from Atlantis, but it's got some different rules and ways to play, and also it's in space, so that makes it cool. And
absolutely.
Okay, oh, yeah.
So for those of you who will not be at Gen Con, we will absolutely get that up on our Facebook page, so we'll make sure to mention it when in a future episode when it comes out. So when is Gen Con this year? When is Gen Con this year?
August?
It's in August.
It's in August.
Okay. So come August... In July, early August. Okay, we will get. We will make sure we get that up on the. We mentioned on the episode. We'll actually get that out there. That's fantastic. I'm excited to play. So now, the other question I've got is: are you available for a game of Space Cadets later on? I mean, the Dice Duel. I want to do a little bit of Dice Duel before we're done here.
I am always Jamie's in for a game of Dice Duel.
Okay, in that case, we're going to wrap up.
Yeah, we have to go.
Yes. So I want to thank you guys so much. We're going to be back in just a little bit. One again, say thank you so much to Sydney for coming and sitting down. You are listening to For Geek's Sake. Welcome back to For Geek's Sake. I'm here in our hotel room with our editor, Nick. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Fantastic. Okay, so I know, folks, it's got a little, as I mentioned at the very, very top of the show, we're a little out of order here. We had an opportunity, we've been here at the Dice Tower Convention, and I should mention, by the way, Dice Tower is a very large, very, really, really cool organization. They do whole bunches of stuff. They put on this convention. They have a series of podcasts and websites and board game reviews and all that kind of fun stuff. We are not affiliated with the Dice Tower in any way, shape, or form. The best way I can explain this to you is they're currently recording their shows. They're recording a bunch of them while they're here and a bunch of the ballrooms at the DoubleTree Hotel. We are recording in our hotel room. So there's a budget stuff that's – well, so I don't want to make it sound like we are fishy with the Dice Tower. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we're just kind of not. But now we're going to get back into This Week in Geek, and we're going to do that. And the first thing we've got for This Week in Geek, so we finished our talking with Cindy Engelstein and her father, Jeff, who was, by the way, also a game designer. He was actually a pretty big game designer. He's done a whole bunch of games.
Yeah, so Jeff has actually designed several games that have had numerous accolades for being innovative and for being just very family-oriented and very accessible. Quick games that have a lot of deep thought, so a minute to learn, a lifetime to master type situation. And he publishes for Stronghold. Space Cadets Dice Duels is one of the ones we talked about earlier.
So that was the game that Sydney kind of helped out with designing, and we were very specifically interested in getting Sydney on the show. I mean, it was an amazing opportunity. We kind of took it and we grabbed gear, we threw it up so we could and had her come in and record. And so when we got finished, I was like, you know, I still haven't gotten to play this game, and they were like, well, do you guys want to go down and play? And so now here's a tip: if you happen to be at a Dice Tower, I'm sorry, at any form of a board game convention, and you meet a couple game designers who invite you to go play their game with them, you say yes.
Always say yes.
Always say yes. So we just got back. We stopped. We left everything here. We went down. We got to play the game with them. It only took us like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think 20 minutes, 5 minutes to set up, maybe 5 minutes of rules explanation, and we were off.
So, and we played the game. It was fantastic. We had an absolute blast. And so we came back, and we're just going to pick up a go. So for This Week in Geek, our first thing, Space Cadet Dice Duels from Stronghold Games. Thanks again to Sydney for coming and recording with us. That was absolutely amazing. That game was so much fun.
It was a blast. It was really a blast. I've seen a lot of videos on it. I've heard a lot of great comments on it. And I finally got to play it, and I got to play with the people who actually know what they're talking about. And it was a great teach, and they sat us down, and we rolled some dice.
It was frantic. It was kind of nuts. We'll get some photos, and the video didn't quite come out well. But we got some photos that we're going to put up there. Guys, if you're looking for a fun family game, an all-ages type thing, this is the game. Honestly, I played a lot of really amazing games. Space Cadets Dice Duels is not my favorite game. I mean, it was as good as Spyfall. It was really well. It was as good, easily as good as Spyfall.
It was accessible. The instructions were very easy. The dice were colored appropriately so that you could distinguish what did what. It was just if you can roll dice, you can play this game.
And it is intense. Okay, so enough about that. Let's cover This Week in Geek. Up first, this one is ridiculously kind of nutty here. This stuff is called, you can find this on the Facebook page, it's called Vitigel. Now, Vitigel, there's a video, if you follow the link, there's a video here of the stuff working. What it basically does is it stops your bleeding within seconds. And so there's this rather uncomfortable video of what looks like a slab of like a pork loin, or I'm sorry, maybe a London broil, that is bleeding for some reason. It looks like it's already sitting there on a, I don't know how it's bleeding. Oh, there's a hose. I'm an idiot. at any rate, they apply the stuff on there, and it stops in seconds. It is insane. This looks like something like, I'm trying to remember which sci-fi. I've seen like 100 sci-fi shows that have this in it. But it just like literally within seconds it stops.
Well, it's the classic sci-fi med pack, isn't it?
Just
grab your med pack, rip it open, slap it on the wound, or what? Exactly. Gel it onto it, and you're good to go.
Dr. Crusher. You know, she comes in, he's bleeding, and she comes in, and she's like, I've warned you about this, Captain. And it's done. Like,
it's all done.
It's that fast. So this stuff has already been cleared for use on animals, and it's going out to veterinarians. They haven't found anything wrong with it yet.
FDA is still looking through it.
Right. The FDA hasn't gotten approval yet. There's also, which was really weird, at the very bottom of the article, there's this little one sentence off. By the way, there's also this stuff called Vitagel, not Vitagel, that does the exact same thing, or does something very, very similar. However, I doubt that one was developed by a 17-year-old. So
yeah. So the impressive thing about this is the age of the, now the individual right now is 22 years old. I mean, but he did actually invent it when he was 17.
So let's be clear here. This guy developed something that stops bleeding within 12 seconds. Sydney at 17 made an amazing board game that like was one of the most entertaining things I've ever played. Yeah. I am a failure. That's really the my
Yeah, I'm currently reevaluating my life choices at the moment.
Seriously, I'm like, I have played a lot of games.
I have knowledge that may be applicable on Jeopardy, likely not.
Oh, if you'd like to know about cultures that were gone a long time ago, I'm not even really your guy. I think there's people who know a lot more about it than me.
If you want to talk about German government, I can do that too.
Oh, there you go. All right. There's
but German government 50 years ago.
So up next for This Week in Geek, this was kind of interesting, kind of going along with our whole board game theme that we've kind of got going on here. So tabletop... is a show that Will Wheaton of actually Star Trek The Next Generation fame, something that he puts on. Now, Will Wheaton played Wesley Crusher, who is, I think, undoubtedly the most annoying character in The Next Generation, and really one of the most annoying characters. I mean, like, thank God for Jar Jar Binks, because finally somebody was like, well, I guess Wesley Crusher wasn't that bad.
It wasn't his fault. It was the writers.
It was. It was absolutely the writers. And what's fun about it, too, is one of the first things I heard about Will Wheaton when he kind of appears back on the limelight, you know, many, many years later, is it's like, well, I hated Wesley Crusher. Yeah, so did I. I'm like, oh, okay, he also didn't like Wesley Crusher. All right, so we're all kind of on the same page there. So he has this show called Tabletop, and go ahead.
Tabletop's actually on YouTube. It's designed by Will Wheaton and a couple other individuals, and it was the whole premise of it is to actually bring instruction to families and to board gamers, and bring some minor celebrities on, and that you watch them play the game with instructions built into the actual video itself. They do a lot of popular games, they do some obscure games, and they actually even do some children's games too to kind of show you some stuff. So like Settlers of Catan Jr., they've done stuff like Five Tribes, Dead of Winter, and a couple other things. They're in a third season currently, and they're funded through crowdfunding on Indiegogo.
So now Indiegogo, if you heard our episode with Brad Petrino, we talked about Kickstarter. Indiegogo is in that same vein. It's another crowdfunding kind of deal. So everybody puts stuff together. And they how much is in each season he's been crowdfunding. So how much did he make for the last season?
For season three, which is the current season they're in right now, their aim was $500,000, and they actually exceeded that almost by triple. So they got about $1.4 million in change, and that was from about 22,000 donors there.
So that part was really, really, I mean, that's all very, very impressive. The problem came in when it turns out one of his producers who preps them on the game before they sit down to play, and, you know, Nick says minor celebrities. For me personally, these are people that I would like. He had like Nathan Fillion in there. He had Felicia Day in there.
Yeah.
Like, if I had the choice between meeting Tom Cruise and Nathan Fillion, there would not even be I wouldn't even hesitate. I would rather meet Nathan Fillion.
Wash from Firefly has been on a couple of times.
Oh, Alan Tudyk. There's so many.
Yeah, great.
So many human, like, for me, guys, I would want to meet more than any major A-lister out there. So, you know, that with that kind of important caveat here. So there's he's a very busy guy. They got a lot of these guys are rather busy. So he had a producer who turns out did not actually do his job. So you want to explain a little bit better?
Of course, yeah. So this particular producer's one of his responsibilities was to thoroughly read and understand the rules. So when everybody showed up, the players showed up, to include Will Wheaton, to the set. Some were familiar, some were not. This producer was his job was to understand the rules and actually break them down for the players. As an aside, his second job attached to that was also to produce the graphics that go along with the video to explain the game as they play. Now, this individual, they messed up, according to Will Wheaton, about 10 games. Not dramatically messed up, but enough where people were starting to get angry about it. Now, I don't know how it actually affects producers. We'll see, I guess.
So, and I think the reason that I wanted to make sure that we talked about this was that, number one, credit to Will Wheaton, because he came out like, and just flat out says, listen, we screwed up. He actually doesn't say screwed up. He drops F-bombs. And you can tell, I mean, just, I mean, it's a very, very, like,
it's heartfelt.
It's a heartfelt, it's a very honest kind of assessment here. But what I think is so interesting about this, especially in light of us talking about that Kickstarter case that went to the Federal Trade Commission, is that you could really see the difference here between a guy who says, look, we messed up. You guys paid us to do a very specific thing, and we didn't do it. We didn't do it like we were supposed to, and we're sorry about that. And he doesn't go out and say, I fired the producer. I'm assuming that guy's not employed anymore.
I would also assume the same thing. I mean, it's unreliable. I mean, it's good business, right, to actually do your job, perhaps.
Right.
But when you don't do your job, you deserve to get
fired. I mean, it looks like you had one job. Like, you, like.
Now, to be fair, though, I don't want to attack the guy because we don't actually know and understand what his actual personal circumstances were.
Right.
All we know is that what he was supposed to be doing didn't get done. And 10 episodes, or rather 10 games that actually produced 10 episodes were not done properly by people who actually donated money for the cause.
So do you think, or you, no, did you back tabletop at all?
Yes, I did back tabletop.
So how do you, then, how do you, that works out well. How do you personally feel? I mean, does this affect whether or not you back them again?
No, I will continue to back it, and I'll tell you why. And but I originally backed it because I liked what they did. I liked they're making it accessible to families and accessible to, you know, the broader audience, and bringing kind of a down to earth approach to board gaming. But I will continue to crowdfund through Indiegogo to the new season of Tabletop because I appreciate what they do. And the tipping point for that, right where the penny dropped, was where Will Wheaton actually published an apology and took ownership for it, because he actually says in his apology that at the end of the day, I am the executive producer. I'm responsible for the entire program. I should have actually overlooked this, and I failed in that as well.
Right, and that's important too. I personally, I don't put as much towards a lot of these crowdfunding projects as I actually would even like to be honest.
I put way too much towards these crowdfunding projects.
Well, good, then you're putting in for me too. I appreciate that. But no, I think this was really important. Anytime I get everybody screws up, the important part is that you do something about it. And so it's very apparent there that he did that. And I thought that was really kind of important. I think it was really great that he did it. And I think it's important to remember going forward, you know, as we're starting to wonder whether or not we can trust some of this stuff. The idea that you're going to see these guys come out and say it, you're going to take ownership for your problems. All right. Well, then you know what? I'm willing to give you a lot more room.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Will Wheaton fanboy. I appreciate what he's doing. And I think the production quality of their programming is great. But I think that, what actually came out of this could have been handled poorly, and it was not. And to me that actually makes it a little more personable, especially the way he posted on his own blog, on his own through Geek and Sundry and everything else, and made it a public a letter to the public, an open letter, and it was great.
Agreed. So we just have a minute left, and we talked about Spider-Man a whole bunch in the last episode, and we've kind of covered a bunch of other stuff kind of in that same vein. So I just wanted to very, very briefly mention, if you guys had not seen it on our page, after we recorded the episode on Sunday, it came out on Thursday, and during that time, Sony Pictures and Marvel Studios announced that they had found who was going to be their Spider-Man star. So I wanted to mention this to you and tell you something very, very clear here. I have no idea who Tom Holland is. He's the guy who's been cast as the as Spider-Man in the Marvel movies. John Watts is on to direct. I've seen a couple of John Watts films. I have not seen Tom Holland. Are you not familiar with Tom Holland at all?
No, not really.
Okay. So I think it's interesting, mostly because at the same time, Marvel also announced that Miles Morales was going to become the Spider-Man in the comics, and that Peter Parker was essentially going to take on. He's going to be alive because back up very briefly. Danielle's not here to ask me the questions like she would normally be. But the important part here is that normally what happens is in the comic books, you have several different series of comics going on at the same time. You have different timelines, different universes, or whatever you want to call it. So in the original one that Miles Morales was in, Peter Parker died, and Miles Morales took over the helm. And the main Marvel line, their main major line, Miles Morales is now going to be the Spider-Man, and Peter Parker is going to be an advisor, a mentor type person to him. Does that mean that we're going to see him move on to into the MCU? Does he eventually going to be on the big screen? I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm very interested to see what happens. There was already a lot of talk about Donald Glover, I think we mentioned before, about doing it. I'm very curious to see what kind of happens there, but just as an update for you guys who may not have seen that. So anyway, okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with our B-roll. We're going to talk about Chris Pratt and Jurassic World and the objectification of men, which, you know, if you're going to objectify a man, Chris Pratt would be the one to do it. So, wait, the one to objectify, not the one. Wait, Does that make sense? We objectify Chris Pratt. I don't think he objectifies anybody. That's what I'm trying
Certainly
to say.
Certainly not me.
Right. No, well, maybe you.
Maybe
all
me.
All right, we're going to be right back. This is For Geek's Sake.
Don't you give up, don't allow disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in.
Welcome back to For Geek's Sake in the hotel room, coming to you from the, I was going to say coming to you live, and that's not true. Coming to you from the Hilton Double
Tree. We can't say the actual name. It's got two trees in it.
The Double Tree Hilton out near SeaWorld here. We are hanging out at Dice Tower Con with not being affiliated with Dice Tower in any way, shape, or form. Okay, so there was this article, too. We talk a bit about women and their roles and the geek culture and the Gamergate and whatever else. And here comes Chris Pratt. So Chris Pratt went from being Andy Dyer on Parks and Rec, who, if you guys haven't seen the show, is just a fat guy. He's like not really fat. He's kind of a sloppy and a schlub and an idiot, you know, and he's kind of a comic relief type character. So this right here, he then got, you know, he got cast on a couple different things, but in Jurassic World now and for his previous roles as well, he suddenly got ripped, just absolutely ripped. And he's talked in a couple different interviews about how the second he got in shape, the opportunities he was given changed drastically. Now, part of that absolutely comes from the fact that he was paid lots of money for Parks and Rec and probably had time to do things like go to the gym all the time. But he had this article, this comment here. Can you read the quote for me?
Sure thing. The quote is, I think it's okay. I don't feel appalled by it. I think it's appalling that for a long time only women were objectified. But I think if we really want to advocate for equality, it's important to even things out.
So if this came from somebody other than Chris Pratt, I'm not sure they would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, I couldn't hear him. I was too busy staring at his abs.
And they're ridiculous. Can I tell you that right now? Like, holy smokes! Like, you could wash your clothes on his stomach. It was insane. I guess if you come from a more, we'll say, I don't know, realistic or cynical objectification, I guess is going to happen anyway. And he's saying, if we're going to objectify it, let's just objectify everybody.
Yeah, I would agree. To be honest, I'm not quite sure if he's actually trying to put a spin on it in a kind of a funny way, ha ha, tongue in cheek.
Right.
But at the same time, though, it kind of brings up an interesting counter argument to that, right?
Yeah, well, and if you remember, so his first really, really big was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
That was this moment where he suddenly got, I mean, he got in great shape for it. He did all this kind of stuff. And there was a couple scenes in there where, like, we just have, like, for no reason at all, Chris Pratt's shirt is off.
Right.
You know, and it was just, that just was what happened. Actually reminded me a little bit of Jupiter Ascending, which was not a great movie. There's no other way around it. But Channing Tatum is in this movie, and he takes off his shirt randomly at one point and doesn't put it on for like 20 minutes. Like, everybody else is fully dressed, and Channing Tatum is just...
I'm pretty sure that's what most people paid for.
Exactly. He's like Magic Mike, but out in space. And so I guess there's definitely that going on. I guess the question is whether or not we should be trying to advocate for like a complete lack of objectification, or we just want to just go and objectify everybody.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if he's saying that in order to bring to attention that we actually exclude objectifying men to anything. This is like a men's angle. But at the same time, I really don't believe that. I just think he's kind of tongue-in-cheek on this.
I think so, too. And I think it's also important. It's not that men aren't objectified. We also get objectified. We just kind of like... We get objectified, but it's not the same thing, man. You know?
It's not. It's not even close.
And I think a part of it also is that whole, we get that whole, like, public perception and the way we get treated on it. So
yeah.
When we get publicly, like, objectified, it's like a great thing, and everybody's like, ah. But then when the women get it, we get into the slut shaming, and we get into kind of a lot of the negative side effects of that kind of stuff. I'm actually completely fine with being objectified. Nobody wants to objectify
me. Right, I
need
to find somebody to actually objectify me. I mean,
exactly.
It's not going to happen right now.
Nobody's loving me for my
body.
I'm
still looking.
Right. But if we can find it, I also would be okay with it. So that was, I thought that was really kind of interesting. So let's go ahead and do our shameless plugs. Do you have a shameless plug for us today, Nick?
Yes, I do. I've got a plug for my friendly local game store, which is Carolina Comics. Great service. They're out of Oklahoma and down in Texoma.
Where?
Texoma. It's what they call like the Red River area, the border between North Texas and South Oklahoma. It's a thing. I hate it. I have to say it, but it's a thing.
All right.
It's Texoma.
Okay.
And if there is a tornado or lightning, that's Texoma.
Okay, so that little
my friend
patch
at local
of
game store, my FLGS, Carolina Comics. Great place.
Fantastic. I think I'm just gonna go ahead. I mean, we've already been shamelessly plugging the Dice Tower the whole time, so I'll just go ahead and do it one more time. Dice Tower, check them out. They do a lot of good stuff. Now, the only thing I will say is, like, Dice Tower is great if you are getting deep into it. Like, if you want to talk about some of the more complicated mechanics and the publishers and a lot of the theory behind these games and the mechanics and all that stuff, it gets pretty ridiculous. However, if you are still kind of like, you know what, Settlers of Catan and Ticket to Ride are about as heavy as I'm trying to get right now, I might also shamelessly plug BoardGameGeek.com. They are a fantastic resource with tons of information, forms for rules. If you're looking for every game ever is on this silly library of theirs. And you can rank them by different types of type of game, the number of players. You can see how long a game takes. There's a really, really great starting point if you're looking for trying to figure out a game that you want to play or get some more information on a game that you're interested in. So there's my shameless plug. Do you have something else?
Yeah, I would also like to plug BoardGameArena.com. It's a web-based program that you can actually just log into for free. Just have an account. Just fill out the really minimal effort to get the account. And you can actually play most of your favorite board games outside of some of your heavier stuff, like Twilight Imperium, Eclipse, and all that kind of thing. But you can actually play with friends online for free on really good, well-made, and graphically accurate board games. You're rolling dice, you're taking names, you're doing everything you got to do. And it's a great system. You can chat, and it keeps stats and scores, and you can rate players. It's a great website.
Fantastic. Okay, so once again, I want to thank you guys all for listening. We want to send out a special, special thank you to Sydney Engelstein for coming in and sitting down and recording with us. She had a very busy schedule, and the fact that she came down was just absolutely fantastic. I also want to thank the Dice Tower, even though, again, we're not affiliated. We're still thanking them because they're really, really cool. And if you guys have got anything that you'd like to share with us, please make sure you post a comment. Let us know about it. You can follow us on Facebook. We'd love for you to subscribe to our podcast. Give us a ranking on iTunes, which, for the record, it turns out, is complicated. But if you can manage to figure out how to rate us on iTunes, we'd absolutely appreciate it. That would be fantastic. If you can't figure it out, you know what? Send us a message and I'll walk you through it. I'll include screenshots. We'll get there together. So on behalf of everybody here at For Geek's Sake, we want to thank you guys so much for being a part of everything. We will talk to you soon.